Captain Wright, Reel 13. You're telling me about the ferry you managed to put in.
Yes, we took Lee tanks across, all the guns, everything. And, while I was still with the 1st Punjab, we came across some elephants that the Japs had been using for pulling their guns. And by some quirk, the 1st Punjab, well, the 1st Punjab regimental badge was an elephant just there. So it was rather appropriate. Anyway, my chaps were looking at these elephants in a war. They were ex-Burma Bombay Company. I said, you don't want to be afraid of them. That's fine. I trotted up to the three of them, as if they were sort of zoo animals. Got about a bit shorter than the length of this room away, and this thing suddenly put its ears out, its trunk right up, and bellowed at me. It was just as if somebody had picked me up and shaken me. And I turned around and ran, and it caused them immense amusement. They thought it was terribly funny. Anyway, somebody who was a Mahout or whatever got hold of one of them, and we decided we'd take it with us, you see. So it came down to the pontoon, which was merely taking 28-ton Lee tanks across. And it took one look at this ferry and wouldn't go near it.
Didn't want to go.
Nope. Mm. So it did the journey back on its own, but with a Mahout. But that was all it thought of.
What would this ferry consist of? Was it another powered raft, like the one
That's
you were
right.
talking about?
No, no. No, this wasn't, because the river was so strong, we could do what was called a flying ferry. You put it... you had a traveller across the... you had a rope across the river and a traveller on it, on pulleys, and then a sort of harness which you pulled out either one way or the other, so that the pontoon was oblique to the line of the current. And it was the pressure of the current that pushed it over. Mm. It's called flying ferry.
What about coming back?
We turned it the other way.
Ah. So you could move the thing round.
Yes.
How long did it take to set up an arrangement like that?
Oh, a day. Mm. If that, yes. Yeah, about a day, the rope and travel and everything, yes.
How did you get on with the first Punjab generally? Well, you know, you'd had a difficult moment with them about this proposed crossing.
Oh, everything was all right after that, mm. Yes.
What sort of work were you doing for them?
I don't know. I just seemed to trundle along with them. I didn't do any sort of exciting things. Mm. No, I didn't think I did. I was only with them a short time. Mm.
Did you have to do any work on improving the Tidim Road or repairing
it? Oh, you bet, yes. We had two D4, Caterpillar D4s, one D8. And we had to keep clearing landslides in order that everything could get through.
How'd you clear a landslide? Would you just bulldoze the soil off the road?
That's right, yes. Angle-dose it over the side. Mm. But when I was back with the company, we had a bridging tank, which was a Valentine with a scissors bridge on the top of it. And I tended to go with that, in case it wasn't needing anything sort of doing to the back seats or anything. And I can remember our divisional commander, a chap called Daddy Warren, marvellous bloke, he got killed. He came up to me one morning as we were setting off with this tank, and he said, he always called me Johnny, I remember, and he said, we've had dead mules and dead Japs, but he said, please, 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 when you go around the corner and see this elephant that we're following, do dissuade the tank people from killing it, you see, because a dead A dead elephant would be too fearful for words. Anyway, we turned the corner one morning and there was a very dead elephant. It had either been, it had probably been shot by a Harry bomber, I expect. And it was very dead. And the question was how to get rid of it. And I thought, well, we get the dozers up and push it over, you see. Anyway, there was some, I forget what his name was, some new subaltern who joined. And I don't know how he came into the act. No, I think I radioed back, that's right. I radioed back and I said, look, get the dozers up and push it over. And this chap came up, full of the joys of being a new officer, and put a bag of dynamite or Amanor or something inside and blew it up. Oh, I mean, a dead elephant sitting on the road is bad enough, but if you've got it finally suspended from all the trees around, oh! I hardly dare look the general in the face after that.
Why didn't the young officer bring up the bulldozer and push it off the road?
What well, I just got into thought he knew better.
You were saying earlier on that the best sort of road really is properly drained subsoil or earth. Hmm. What was the Tidham Road like from that regard? Was it a well-constructed highway?
Oh, no. No, anything but. I think it had only existed for about a couple of years before we were on it, but it was pretty, as they said, would say in Urdu, kacha, you know, no good. But no, how we got anything done, it, I don't know. It's about the most agreeable experience I had. That again was slightly frightening because, as always, when there was a patrol, they always chose me. I think they were trying to get rid of me or something. But
could be that you were good at patrolling.
Well, I don't know about that. But anyway, when we got to a place, when we got to Tidham, the Japs were sitting on a thing called Kennedy Peak, which was about the highest hill around there, about 11,000, I think. And so we thought, well, we'd try and go another way. And it was two sides of a square to go to from Tidham to Kennedy Peak and down to the beginning of the road, down Kalamia. And I tried the other side of the square, or the other two sides of the square. And I went again with the tank man, and I think my Havildar again, a great bloke he was, and a sapper, I suppose. And off we went. It was, I think we took our rations with us. It took us 14 days. I don't know how many miles we were. It was quite a way. And we had a thing called a jungle ration. It was rather like a huge sardine tin. And it had a lot of good stuff in it. It was very good. So I couldn't carry 14, I took about 12. And by dint of a little bit of trading, we swapped this out and the other for eggs and things. So we set off on this thing, and we were the first Allied people they'd seen for about 2 years, and we were given this wonderful welcome. Wonderful people called the Chins. Oh, they were delightful. Totally rustic and delightful. And they had this wonderful drink called Zoo, and I was instructed by the brigade commander, no, the divisional commander, Daley Warren, what the etiquette was. He said I'd have to go and see the head man, and then he called in the elders, and we'd all sit in a circle, and they'd pass this drink round, which was called Zoo. And it was kind of millet wine, very strong. And you'd drink it through a hollow bamboo tube down into an earthenware vessel, which was full of all sorts of guns, and they poured water into it, and you drank this stuff, you see. And the etiquette was that you had to drink the water out of sight, down to the neck, before passing it on to the next chap. And of course, what happened was when I got the water down almost to the bottom, the head man would ask me some question about, or tell me about the Japs in a particular position, and show me on the horizon where it was, what time somebody had topped it up again. Good old Oriental habit. But oh, we had a lot of fun now. And we came across, I forget what they were called, I think they're called the Luchai Scouts. They were a sort of undercover organisation run by some wild Irishman. So, great fun, that.
Was the information that you got from this man generally accurate, as far as you know?
Oh, indeed, yes.
They knew what was going on.
Well, they knew at a different level because they covered a huge area and they got all their information from the Chins and the Lushais and all those people.
But the Chin headman, when he was pointing out
things,
did he know what was going on?
Yes, because he'd had some nasty things done to him by the Japanese. And so he had an ear to the ground, yes. Mm. Poor, I can't think what sort of deal they're having now. It must be appalling. Dreadful to think of.
You mentioned that you were doing things like patrolling. What sort of patrols were you doing? Was it reconnaissance patrols mainly?
Well, that was,
route,
yes. Route, mainly, yes.
Well, that is very much an engineer task, isn't
it?
Oh,
yes.
Finding
yes.
Practical routes.
Yes.
And what was this a good route that you explored?
Oh, yes.
To get around Kennedy Peak.
Yes. Mm. In fact, Japanese used it the other way around. Well, they crossed over the river, which we wouldn't have done. But that was just to avoid us, you see, when they came in. But no, it was good.
Did you do any assault engineering during this period?
No. They were very much in retreat. They were sort of delaying tactics. We had trouble with mines. We had to clear mines. We had, what else?
What were the Japanese mines like? You've described German mines and Italian mines.
Not bad, not bad. Better made than ours. Our stuff was dreadful. Mm. But, yeah, they had some quite good ones. Mm. They're very small, about this size.
Like
whereas a telemine, the German one, was about this
yes.
size.
From what you're saying, the Japanese mine was about the size of a tea plate.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Were they anti-personnel or were they intended to be against vehicles?
Against vehicles. Mm. Yeah, we lost one chap killed by one of those. But
were they difficult to detect and lift, or were they?
No.
They weren't.
No. But of course they didn't. Well, I mean, neither did the Germans. They were just all scattered.
Mm. What about booby traps? Because that's frequently a device used by an army in retreat, isn't it?
Yes, well, the only booby traps that they had, as far as I hear, I never saw one, were a thing called punges, which were elephant trap type things with sharpened bamboo, sharpened and hardened bamboo spikes underneath, so that you fall in and impale yourself. But no, I didn't come across any of those.
And you mentioned also making airstrips. How did that happen? What do you?
Ah, yes. Well, when we got down to Kalemio, and we met up with the 11th East African, they went through us, and on to Kalewa, and down the Chinwin, and we stopped, and built an airstrip. With the offer that when it was complete, we'd be flown out for Christmas.
That's an incentive.
It was, yes.
Did your Indian troops know what Christmas meant?
Well, yes. As I saw in the paper today, there was some silly article about our knowledge of Islam. It's strange how people don't already know this. Well, I suppose most do, but Jesus, one of their prophets, and so they're a parallel organisation, really. But I know they're very tolerant about that sort of thing.
So what do you have to do if you want to build an airstrip and
Well, we had these bulldozers, and so that it was just a question of knocking some trees down and filling the holes in with bits of rock and broken stone and earth or sand, I suppose, yes. I forget how long we took, but it was under a week.
What sort of aircraft was it intended to receive?
Oh, DC-3s. They were the workhorse, absolutely.
Did you put any special surface down on the runway?
Well, it depends. I mean, the amount of traffic we were going to have was only A, temporary, and B, very minor. So it was a one-off thing, really. No, we didn't worry about surfacing. We might have worried a bit about spraying it with water or something, but that's about all.
So in Europe, they were building airstrips using a wire mesh to provide a sort of runway surface.
Oh, yes. What do they call that now? Pierce plank, yes.
Pierce plank or something
yes.
like that.
Yeah.
Did you have anything of that sort in Burma?
There was, but we didn't have to use it because you just won't need, that's for sort of very soft stuff. I think they used it, I think the Chindits used it, I'm not sure.
Did they fly you out as promised?
Oh, indeed, indeed, yes. Yes. And that was my next task, of course. I was given when I was recovering from one of the few hangars I've ever had. It was quite a good one. Bad one. The general, old Daddy Warren, asked me to design and build a memorial for 161 Brigade at Kohima, which I duly did.
Where did you get the idea for the design? What was it that inspired
you? Well,
you
see, the Nagas, they worship virility, and one of the signs of virility is a male organ, I suppose. So when a chap came of age, they'd have a bit of a wingding somewhere in the jungle, usually in a nice clearing. And to commemorate it, they put a phallic emblem up. And I remember there was a place in Dimapur which had an enormous number of these, a great huge thing. It was known as Penis Park. And I decided I wouldn't vandalize the beautiful countryside there by doing anything too frightful. So I just got the biggest stone I could find. And I was living on my own with a few stonemasons, or sappers. That's where I learnt my stonemasonry from, which I used in this. I decided we'd put this big phallic emblem up. And I stayed in my tent, and I used to eat with the district commissioner, whose photograph is in that commissioning thing. And he said he could arrange for local people to move anything I found. Well, I found in a scree an enormous stone, 22 foot long, I think.
Once you'd found your stone, how did you move it to the site?
Well, I got onto the district commissioner and asked him how I would reward these people. I think he said he could get a gang of, I forget how many chaps, but quite a lot. And they could get it down onto the road. And once on the road, it could be transferred to a tank transporter. So I said, that sounds fine. How do I pay them? And he said, £2 of salt each. Because it was a very precious commodity up there, so far from the sea, I suppose. And so I sent a signal to my wonderful divisional commander, Daddy Warren. Could he arrange to get £2 of salt times 200 or whatever the gang was? And the signal came back. I wish I'd kept it. Thank you for your signal. arrangements will be made by fair means or foul to do as you wish. And so it duly arrived. And some months later, I met him and thanked him for this. And I said, thank you very much, General. I said, which did you use, foul mean, fair means or foul? And he winked at me. He said, foul. So we got it on the tank transporter up to this position, which I chose because it was a saddle which marked north from south, ran east and west, and virtually was where we stopped the Japanese. And the dedication on it says, at Kohima, the Japanese invasion of India was stopped in April 1944. And to my dismay, I heard that the Japanese government, the Indian government, had decided to build a road there, and they just moved my memorial. I don't know where the hell it is. They probably junked it, I don't know. But I don't think much of them. So there it is, or was.
What happened to you then after you got back to India and done the memorial?
No, that was in India, of course, being Kohima.
Sorry, yes, after.
Yes. Well, then I was separated from the company, which had gone through Kohima, down to the Chinwin and across. And when I had finished the memorial, I had to make my way to Camilla, which was army headquarters, and get transport by air from there. Very disagreeable experience at having to be back in base areas with wretched bureaucrats and all that sort of thing. However, we got down there in the end, and the company was just it was at Pegu, north of Rangoon, and it was just before Rangoon fell. I was only there about a month, and then I was transferred to the School of Military Engineering at Royal Quay.
What were they doing in the area around Pegu? Were they engaged?
Well, what
in
we were doing mainly, it was rather strange, really. We were picking up refugees of the, what's it called, the 10th Army, I think, the Japanese 10th Army, who had been, we cut them off from the east by advancing down from Mandalay. And so these people were coming over from Prome, in dribs and drabs, in order to cross the Salween, and we were picking up or getting rid of. And so it was sort of mopping up, I suppose you'd call it, yes. And one of the strange things we had to do was to run a railway. There was a railway track which went from Pegu right up to the Salween, and was it the Sitang? The Sitang it was, yes. And we managed to get jeep wheels made to run jeeps on the railway. And we used these as traction for the ordinary rolling stock. But to get the stuff going, the jeep wasn't quite powerful enough, so we had to tell the passengers to stand round it and push, you see, and the jeep revved up, and as soon as it was moving, they had to jump on board, and off we went. Braking was the same problem. We had to jump off the jeep and put stones on the rail, I remember. It was all very hand-to-mouth. Anyway, I left there in about May and had about a couple of months only in Roorkee, where I was the demolitions instructor.
What did that involve doing? What were you teaching?
Mainly booby traps. Japanese booby trap, Japanese mines.
What sort of booby traps did the Japanese make?
Well, now, actually, what you've told me, I suppose they didn't make any. They, of course, they had non-explosive ones, didn't they? No, it was just mines, I think. Mm. Yes.
Because you've been talking about punji pits.
Yes, that's right, yes.
Main thing.
Mm. Yes.
Who were you teaching? Was this recruit training
officers? Officers, yes. Mm. Yes.
How did you go about doing that? Was it classroom work or was it mainly practical outdoor work?
Well, practical classroom work, and I can remember we used to have rather, we had a reasonable mess, and I can remember giving a lecture after some fairly good lunch, and sitting in the front row was a brigadier who I suppose largely caused by drink, but in a way by my monotonous tone, he dropped off to sleep. And I had a great temptation to make an explosion, but no, I didn't think I'm a bo what I did find really is that instruction or teaching is the most exhausting business, really is, because one is driven by the receptive powers of your audience, and you've got to adapt according to what they can manage, I suppose, but exhausting and very little credited, I think.
You had 2 year, two months there, June and July 45. What happened after that?
I got on the boat. Well, I went down to that famous place called Dialali, and I can imagine, I know why it's called that. God, what a place.
What's wrong with it then? Because everyone complains about Dulali and going Dulali. So what is it about Dulali that?
Well, it's middle of nowhere. It's outside Bombay, I suppose, not too far away, and it has a gin distillery there. It's about the only activity there. And we lived in this dreadful transit camp with the food supplied by a contractor, which is quite revolting. It was a, well, it was, I've known worse, but a place I was glad to get out of.
Why were you going back? What was it?
Oh, a thing called
You want Python?
Python, exactly, yes.
You've done so many years overseas, and
That's
you were
right.
due for return. How did you get back to Britain?
On the SS, no, yes, the SS Carthage, I think it was, which had been converted to the American style of troop ship. And I thought that as a captain I'd do a little bit better than when I come over on the Durban Castle. But by God, it was awful. We were in a thing called a standee. And right down the hill, below the waterline, and there was a sort of grid with all these cots on it. I was about number 15 or something. And you went up this thing, it was perilous. You had to step on other people's cots to get up to where you were. You see, and then when you were up at number 15, you had to hang on to number 16 and become horizontal through the strength of your tummy muscles and roll into it. It was ridiculous. So I staked myself out 12 square feet of deck and spent day and night for 17 days in that position. I never had to go down to the standee. It was terrible.
What was the food like on the way home?
Better than Deal Alley, but yes, not a lot better. It was all right.
Where did you arrive when you got back?
Southampton. And there we were told we had to go to the depot. My parents lived in Wimbledon outside London, and I could have got on the Southern Railway and been there in no time flat. But oh no, we had to get on this troop train. It went up to Reading and across and up one side or the other, going north to Halifax, where we were. That was our depot, and having been changed from Chatham. And there you were ticked off various sort of